Hello, hello everybody, and welcome to TechMeToo.eu. Our guest today is Keith Mender. Keith has been a colleague of mine for some time at Google, and then he moved to Facebook for another year in Ireland, still in Dublin, and now he decided to move on and start his own business. He's taking care of a portfolio of websites that are bringing him money through advertising. He's now able to work and live from wherever he wants, and that's great, right? So we're going to understand in this interview how he bootstrapped his company and what are his strategies to buy and sell websites. I think bootstrapping is still the best way to start a company, and you'll see that Keith prepared his path to freedom in a way very, very well. I hope you enjoy this interview, starting now. So I'm here with Keith Mender. Hello.
Hi. Hi Ben, how you doing?
Good, good. Very happy that you're here. So this is the very first time I'm making an interview for TechMeToo in person. It's usually always over Skype.
Okay,
so
it's an honor.
Yeah. So Keith, you were working here at Google for a couple of years.
Yeah, I was at Google for 2.5 years. And then I moved to Facebook, also based here in Dublin, where I worked for a further year and a half.
So you made them all. You should just add maybe Microsoft and...
Exactly, yeah. I should go to the next big thing. Twitter, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, but you won't do that, right?
So no.
What you've done, you've seen the big boys. You probably learned a lot. You learn a lot in those companies. It's definitely great.
Absolutely.
And now you're going to go on your own.
Yep.
And work on a portfolio of websites. So tell us a little bit, what are your plans?
Sure, yeah. So I'm finally taking the plunge and freeing myself of the shackles of corporate world. So yeah, basically, as you mentioned, I'm interested in building a portfolio of small niche websites and then monetizing them through basic online advertising through the classic exchanges and networks, AdSense being the kind of the main one at the moment. So I look to buy undervalued websites, so sites that haven't been updated in a while, are poorly monetized, are kind of in disrepair. So a way of looking at it is kind of real estate, like houses that are undervalued, and then rejuvenating it, so improving the design, adding more content, improving the monetization, and then looking to either sell it or rent it out through advertising. So it's much like the real estate model of people buying properties and developing them and adding value and hoping to reap a profit, but I'm just doing it in the virtual world.
Yeah, excellent. So maybe, as for us to understand, it's good to start with an example.
Sure.
One of the sites I know you have is
justpoo.com.
Yeah.
That's it.
So what's the story behind it?
Sure. So I came across this website quite a few years ago, probably about 4 years ago now. I was aware that Winnie the Pooh was a popular keyword that people were searching for. People were interested in finding more about the stories. It is a really well-favored story from Disney in the original book series, and it continues to be very popular. So I was keen to see if there were sites on the internet about the topic that were not well monetized. So this one that I came across hadn't been updated in some time. Did have some ads, but were poorly placed on the page. So I reached out to the current owner of the site and began to discuss how the site currently performs, both in terms of traffic and earnings. And then we negotiated a price, and then I sent him the money and signed a contract. I took control of the site, hired a developer to spruce it up, improve the design, content, and then improve the monetization. And now I just make the cash flow from the advertisements.
And so did it pay off? Did you increase the number of people visiting the site or the monetization? Is that like a 10%, 20%?
Sure, or? Yeah. So in terms of activity and traffic, it has increased, but not dramatically so. Probably in the region of kind of a 10% or 20%, you know, in terms of daily page views or something like this. but the monetization has increased. So the CPM rate being the metric of kind of looking at how much you're making from the impressions that you're generating has gone up quite a lot. But the main thing I'm looking for is really a return on my investment. So I know how much I spent on the site to begin with and the cost of redeveloping it and the running costs that do exist. And then I just think about kind of how much I've made back. And so this example, I kind of make back about 100% a year, approximately. So it's pretty attractive.
Yeah, so I know somebody called Rob Whaling that is doing the podcast Startups for the Rest of Us. And he has also a portfolio of websites, and he was talking about his strategy, exactly what you do, looking for undervalued websites. But then his price range would be 6 months to 1 year earning, current earning. That's what he was ready to pay for a website. Is that reasonable? Would that be the range you would use to when negotiating?
Yeah, totally. So there does seem to be a norm out in the market for this. So there are other players in this market, and the kind of the going rate or the thinking is that you should be paying around about a year of revenue, up to about 2 years of revenue, which is pretty extraordinary as it is, because when you think about traditional businesses, sometimes they consider it up to kind of 10 years. If you're buying a kind of sandwich shop down the road, you'd be interested in it kind of its revenue times 10 or something like this. But I think that's just the nature of this market, is there are very limited amount of buyers. Because it is this new complex world, relatively new. So the amount of people with the expertise to get into that market is a lot lower. So therefore, I think the buyer has kind of a more to play with in terms of power and so on to get a good deal.
So how small is too small and how big is too big?
Yeah. So, I mean, it depends kind of like where you're at in this kind of venture. So I'm kind of after sites that are around kind of $10,000 mark, which is certainly not small change at all. But by virtue of paying that amount of money, you're getting a site that is quite serious, that is generating revenues potentially, or is at least getting quite a lot of traffic. And then I'm going to be developing time and money into improving the site, which is kind of a fixed cost typically. So you want that fixed cost to be relative to a site that's going to generate you good long-term revenues of a substantial amount. So I think there is such a thing as kind of sites being too small, that they're not worth your time and money to develop.
How many sites can you possibly manage as a one person dealing with all those sites?
Yeah.
Is that something like 10, 20, 50 or?
Yeah, sure. So I think you can manage quite a few. It depends what kind of sites you go for. The ones I typically are looking at are ones that contain a bunch of content, rich pages, so a lot of contextual information about a particular topic, pictures and information that doesn't necessarily need to be updated on a regular basis. So if you had a site about the Roman Empire or something, so a lot of historical information, it's not really going to change. So that's kind of static, and you can just let it be. So that'd be an example of one that's very easy to manage. Basically, you don't need to do anything. Other ones where you kind of have some sort of content that increases over time. So I have a site with children's songs on, for example. Mm-hmm. So there are new songs that come to bear fruit. So I can add them to the site, and I need to spend time managing the content, the user-generated content that appears on the site. But it's very low on the whole. But if you went for something like a forum or e-commerce site, then that obviously requires a considerable amount of time. So it depends ultimately what you're going after, but I think for the kind of site that I'm looking at, I could probably manage about 10 sites without creating too much burden. And something I'm looking at more and more is outsourcing a lot of the operations to do with sites. Quality control, reviewing content that's generated by users can all be outsourced at a very low cost. And it's much more effective to do that than
so
to spend your time doing.
What kind of companies would you call for that? I guess you're not looking yourself, you're using outsourcing companies, or are you going to Elance.com? What's your strategy?
So I typically look at the likes of Elance, Rent-A-Coder, Odesk being the kind of the main three. And it's incredible the talent you can find that is extremely low cost. And typically you just find someone, you work with them for a few little projects, and if you find that they're high quality, then you just keep hold of them. Mm-hmm. And you work with them off-site, so you forget about Elance, you just negotiate via email and send them money by PayPal. And it's fantastic, truly. You can get really
How many people are you working with at the moment? Is that a couple, or do you need to have a bigger pool in order to be able to react quickly whenever you have a change?
Yeah, so I have a few regular people that I work with, a designer based in actually back home in Brighton, and I have a data entry person based in India that I've used quite a lot over time, and there's enough work that I can just use that person. But in the future, I could look to have a couple of people and then just delegate work between the two. At the moment, I'm not doing a huge amount of it, so it's not a case of that I need to think about having a pool of resources.
Yeah, but you already have a couple of, they're not full-time employees, but no. You work with them fairly regularly.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Excellent. And obviously that keeps costs low, and it's a good way. One of the risks, I guess, is when you buy a property is that the value decreases because people stop being interested in the content. Like Winnie the Pooh is very popular now, and maybe it will get out of date, not so fashionable in a couple of years. How do you pick your trends?
Yeah, so actually I try and stay clear of trends in general for this very reason that you're trying, or at least I'm trying to buy a site that has long-term value. So Winnie the Pooh, you could argue, is something of a trend. I mean, there were a series of movies in the kind of the 90s on it, and that may taper off. But in fact, I think Disney want to keep it alive as a franchise. It's actually their number one franchise in terms of revenue generating, because the amount of merchandise and spin-off TV shows and the like. So I think it's important for me that I try and find niche areas that are what's known as evergreen, so will always be popular. There will always be people looking for that content. So the example of the Roman Empire or something, I think they'll always be interested in that. You'll always be able to generate traffic and revenue from something like that that isn't kind of related to technology or something like this that could come and die quite quickly.
So also, are you only looking at the English-speaking market, or are you interested in, French or Russian, or even, languages you maybe don't even speak?
Yeah, sure. So they would indeed be languages I don't speak, so it's a bit unfortunate that my skills are very limited in that area. I think there's a huge opportunity to go after sites in different languages, just because the amount of people in those markets is so much lower. I think there are a few of us in this space that are attacking English sites. There's huge opportunities. There really are. I'm not doing it at all at the moment, just because I don't have the skills and the time to consider it. But it's something I would love to explore in the future. I think you can make use of translation tools just to find the sites, and then the data tools are out there which are universal between languages. To analyze the site and the opportunity, and then you can hire people in with language skills to try and do the negotiation process for you, and so on. So it's plausible for an English only speaking person to gain into that market. It's just a lot more difficult, so it makes sense to stick with what you know, at least until you get going.
Do you use any special tools to improve your website? I'm thinking maybe A/B testing or tools to make sure that maybe you create content that will appeal to people, or is that more just by a knowledge you build over time?
Sure. So I use a host of tools, not enough, however. There is a lot of data there which will really help you and guide you in terms of what new content to create and how to kind of mold your site. Analytics is a great starting point by seeing what kind of keywords are generating traffic for your site, what people are really looking for. I like to look at competing sites, just really analyze what my competitors are doing, what features they have that I do not, what content they have, and then basically try and replicate it. So I'm always trying to create the best site in the niche that I operate.
Just Pooh is number two or number three. I mean, you probably have the Disney website, the official one, and you write there number three. So how important is SEO for you?
Yeah, it's extremely important. The ranking for the relevant keywords is purely what matters, because all the traffic that I generate is organic. I don't pay for any advertising at all. So it is very important, that placement. But I don't actually devote any energy into SEO per se. I know the basics, but that's about it. I just try and keep it as natural as possible, which I think ultimately is how to win over the search engines. They are looking for sites that are just natural in the language and structure, in terms of having headings and that kind of thing. So I'm just following those guidelines. That works for me. It would be something I'd like to devote more energies into, maybe even hire an expert in that field. But at the moment, it works for me fine. I seem to be doing okay, so I'm happy to stick with that
strategy. So no advertisement for you. Do you think that you'd be able to make money out of advertisement, or do you just think it's a waste of resource? It's hard to get even.
Yeah, so I'm not sure. I've dabbled a little bit, and I didn't find it that effective. In terms of arbitrage, I don't think you can make any profit from the immediate traffic that you generate by purchasing it. There could be a case where you're buying traffic that then generates long-term visitors, which will make back the initial cost of acquiring those users. However, I tend to find on my sites the bounce rate is really high, so the amount of users that actually come back is quite low. So it doesn't make sense to make a huge effort to buy them in the first place if they're not going to come back.
Yeah, that's because probably you're content driven.
Absolutely.
So you don't sell a product, so you don't have an opportunity to make a margin over something you're selling on your website.
That's it.
Would you be interested in going, maybe buying a site that sells things and try to go in that market? It's probably a very different gig, but would you be interested?
I would be very interested, just for curiosity's sake, I think. It's always been something I'd love to get my teeth into. I think the opportunities to do things like split testing and get back into buying traffic, which is something I've got experience with in the past, would be great. Having said that, you know, I'm just trying to keep focus on a particular area which has the capacity to generate revenues in the long term without any kind of day-to-day operations. Whereas if you have an e-commerce store, you need to consider the fact that if you go away for a couple of weeks holiday, you need a plan to you know, handle it. So it's not something I'm approaching at the moment.
Yeah, although you could go also into the virtual good. I mean, that also includes software. I heard the story of somebody, the first person to really build a Vuvuzela application long before the World Cup. And as they were long before the World Cup, they were ranked very high. And you know, it was a short period of time they were making huge amount of money. Just by setting, you know, customizing, like put your flag of your country on the application. This is $1. Otherwise, it's free, but everybody wants to have the customized version.
Of course.
Or at least enough people. Do you have any other sites that we could visit and see, you know, how you handle them?
Sure. So the other big site that I have is busongs.com. So BUS and songs.com.
One word.
The original name comes from the fact that these songs are kind of ones that you might sing on the school bus, and the wheels on the bus go round and round, etc., etc. I'm not going to sing on TV. But
I feel free, right? Though, if you have one you really like.
So it's basically a directory of children's music, and then users come along, they consume the content. Some come back over time. But it's a case of just people just really consuming stuff and then hopefully checking out the advertisements on their way out. So that's the main example of that, and Winnie the Pooh site. And I also have a couple of ebook websites. So I do a little bit of e-commerce, having said that, but they're not really kind of big earners for me, and I'm probably looking to really offload them at some point and keep my focus on this area which I have kind of developed.
I wonder, what's your opinion around content farms? Because they would be kind of competitors. They would maybe pick sites that you're, you know, focusing on, and you're trying to build high quality content that is stable. People can come back, you know, a year later, it will still be nice and up to date. And then you have content farms coming in and rushing often poor quality, but ranking very high because they have all those gray hat SEO techniques. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, I love their business, to be honest. It's one of those ideas I wish I thought of. They are doing fantastically well. And I think Google and other search engines are right to reward them quite well because they often do provide at least some content for these very kind of long tail keywords, which they typically attack. It's not the greatest content. So I think users will still rely on niche sites that are really focused on one particular area and provide a range of answers or content that the user is after. Typically, these content farms are going more for kind of the how to do something or quick answers to technical problems, all these kind of things. So they're not really niches that I'm in. I don't think that'll be after the kind of areas that I'm in. So I don't feel it as a threat.
And what's driving you? I understand, you know, having 10 websites that allow you to live, not have, you know, any boss telling you what to do, this is amazing. But do you like to just have those, you know, few websites and then, you know, take it easy, maybe work the 4 hours work week when you don't do too much and then do whatever you like, but not necessarily to monetize? Or is that a way for you to maybe then go and do something else that is even bigger and so you have the financial freedom to do it?
I'm not sure. I mean, I'm basically just about to embark on that journey. So I'm curious to see kind of how much I enjoy it, how successful it can be, and maybe what I would like to do afterwards if I don't want to stick with it. I do have the idea in mind that I would love to really start a real startup in the sense of kind of creating something really new, a new product or service online in the kind of more traditional route. And so this would certainly provide me with the freedom to take that risk in terms of time and money to invest into such a project. So it's something that I could think about approaching in a year or two's time.
So you've been 4 years in big corporation, very successful, Google, Facebook. Life is easy in those companies. You get whatever you like. Usually you get the free food. You get massages. It's a good life, you know, and you don't have to worry too much about the next day. How is fear playing with you? Are you just excited or do you feel the fear?
I certainly do feel the fear. As you say, it's very comfortable here and I've had a really great time. I've learnt a lot and met a lot of great people. So it's certainly very daunting to go into this unpredictable world. But I've already built a bit of success already, so I know that I have the capacity to do it. It doesn't seem too fictitious at the moment. So I'm quite confident that I'll be able to get into it. And I think there's lots of opportunities to meet other people in this space, to work in co-working spaces, which are really kind of taking fashion these days. So to meet other people that are also freelancing or working on their own project, but want to come together with other like-minded people. So I definitely think there's opportunities to keep social and to keep a great work environment around you. So I don't think it's too daunting in the sense of I'm going to be stuck in my bedroom or something all day long, coding away or something.
Something that I hear very often and what makes people uncertain of starting their own project is how long should you bootstrap or how long should you keep employment before you go and go on your own? And it's true that it's very difficult because it also relates to your personality, how much of a risk taker and maybe what stage of life, you know, your life you're in. How long have you been working on that? I mean, developing skills around that area you're in?
Yeah, sure. So I'm quite fortunate in that the jobs that I've had, both at Google and Facebook, have been related to the online advertising space, which is now what I'm getting into. So I've just learned a lot just by being in the roles and understanding the industry, understanding the partners that we worked with. So I guess I kind of really started on this a few years ago and slowly built it up over time. I've been quite conscious about kind of not taking my focus away from my current day-to-day job. I really wanted to maximize what I've had out of that time. And also, I found it quite hard really to have the headspace in the evenings or so to come back and to really work on it. I think it's certainly very plausible to find the time. It's just a case of if you want to find the time. But I think I've slowly worked on it, and now I have the freedom of the time to do it. No excuses anymore.
And so my understanding is that, well, you don't need an office to do that. You're working with people remotely already. So the world is your playground. You're free to go wherever you want, and you don't have a plan exactly where you want to establish your company.
Yeah, it's a great problem to have, really. And obviously the dream of many, to be able to work freely at any time in any place. So I feel extremely fortunate to have that kind of problem. And hopefully things will go well and I'll be able to kind of explore the world and work on a beach here and there, or in a cyber cafe in Timbuktu, or wherever I want. So it's a really exciting prospect, and I feel it's a really fascinating industry to be in because of these benefits. And there are an increasing amount of spaces and industries that you can do this in, terms of finance, consultancy, or anything, these kind of service-based models where you could potentially be anywhere, as long as you have a laptop, maybe a phone.
Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic. I think, you know, your career so far, Google, Facebook, and then your own gig, and being able to work wherever, sounds really good, but probably that we need to keep in mind for people who maybe like to do the same. You know, it's been a lot of work to get to that stage. You didn't do that in one day to the other. You decided, hey, I'm going to start websites and everything. It takes a few years, but then the reward seems to be really appealing. So yeah, you know, I'm sure you'll inspire quite a few people.
It's certainly a great payoff. But I think, you know, the grass is always greener, as always. So although it sounds great to be able to travel the world and work remotely, ultimately, you know, you will miss home. You will miss the people you've left behind, the opportunities. You may find that the work that you're getting into is not as enjoyable as you might think. You may get frustrated by the lack of support around you. So there's new problems that arise. And yeah, I'm excited to check it out. And you never know, I may come back to the corporate gig at some stage.
Excellent. So it was really great having you. Thank you so much for taking some time to stop by and record this interview. It will be very interesting to know what you're going to do and what are the next sites. If you can give me a list of sites, I'm going to put them, you know, on the interview notes so people can have a sense of what you're doing. Okay. And maybe suggest you sites that they think would be good for you.
Absolutely, that'd be great.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Ben.